is Brother Steve again with Fountain of Life, Daily Inspiration. Going back to the book of Hebrews again, I want to go over a few things here in chapter 7 and 8, maybe into 9 a little bit. I'm not sure if we'll get that far or not, but I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to pick out a few things here for the sake of time. One of the things here in chapter 7 and 8, but especially in chapter 7 here, or actually throughout the whole book, book of Hebrews, one of the things that the writer is bringing out very clearly is how the new covenant is so much better than the old, and how here in chapter 7, and also the fact that the old covenant was abolished, was done away with, and the law was taken away. And here in chapter 7 here, in the beginning he talks about Melchizedek, who is calls him the king of Salem, the priest of the Most High God, and nobody seems to really know who this Melchizedek was, but it was somebody that met Abraham when he came back from the slaughter of the kings, and Abraham paid him tithes. Now we know that according to the law, they were supposed to give tithes to Levi or to the Levites, which had the priesthood to provide for their priests living. But this Melchizedek is not one of that Levitical priesthood. He is a priest of the Most High God outside of that, and here Abraham paid tithes to this Melchizedek. And then farther down it also brings out the point here. Okay, let's go to verse 4. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. And verily they that are of the sons of Levi who receive the office of the priesthood have a commandment to take tithes of the people according to the law, that is of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promises. Here it's bringing out the point that he who is not one of the descent of the Levites received tithes from Abraham, and then it also brings out the point that it says, and without contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. And here men that die receive tithes, but there he received them of whom it is witness that he liveth. And as I may say, so say Levi also, who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham, for he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. Bringing out the point that even Levi, the priesthood, paid tithes in Abraham to Melchizedek. Now there's some very deep thoughts in this chapter, and I'm not going to be able to tap into it very deeply, but just I would encourage you just to study it through yourself. Because there's some very deep thoughts in here that takes a little bit of time and meditation to get out of, and we're not going to be able to get it in this 10-15 minutes time. But here it's very clearly pointing out that the need for us to understand that the priesthood, the Christian life, the priesthood according to Christ, even if it says farther on, is not according to the law, but it's according to something much better than the law, and that's what he's bringing out throughout this most of the book of Hebrews here. Verse 11, if therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? See, we remember, as we read earlier, it talked earlier again, as Christ having come a priest according to the order of Melchizedek. And here it's saying that if therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? Verse 12, for the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. For he of whom these things are spoken pertaineth to another tribe, of which no man gave attendance at the altar. He's speaking again of Christ who came, and he will bring the point out here in verse 14, for it is evident that our Lord sprang out of Judah, of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning the priesthood. Here, Jesus is of the line of Judah and of David, and there was, it's not of a priestly line. It's not, he's not a Levite. He's not of Aaron's tribe, or of the tribe of Levi. But he is. It says that there was a change, and there was a change also of the law. It is yet far more evident that after the similitude of Melchizedek, there arises another priest who is made not after the law of a carnal commandment, but after the power of an endless life. For he testifies, "Thou art a priest forever," after the order of Melchizedek. There again, just bringing out the reality of how much better the new covenant is than the old covenant, and how Jesus is the priest today. And we'll see that farther on here. I want to bring out some more points there on that. For verse 18, "For there is verily a disannulling of the commandment going before for the weakness and unprofitableness thereof. For the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did, by the which we draw nigh unto God. And inasmuch as not without an oath he was made priest, for these priests were made without an oath, but this with an oath by him that saith unto him, The Lord swear and will not repent, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." By so much was Jesus made a surety of a better, covenant, or testament, it says. "And they truly were many priests, because they were not suffered to continue by reason of death. But this man, because he continues ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for us. For such an high priest became us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate and from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who needeth not daily, as those high priests, to offer up sacrifice, first for his own sins, and then for the people's. For this he did once, when he offered up himself. For the law maketh men high priests which have infirmity, but the word of the oath, which was since the law, maketh the Son, who is consecrated forevermore." Again, some real deep thoughts in there. I just won't be able to bring them all out, but I just encourage you to study that out. The idea that how much better the new covenant is than the old covenant, and how the law, made men who were imperfect, made them priests, and they could never take away the sin for good. They had to offer up sins for themselves as well. Offer up offerings for themselves as well as for the people, and it just did not have the same power as the new covenant does. Okay, let's go on to chapter 8. Let's go down to verse 6. "But now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much also he is the mediator of a better covenant, which was established upon better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. For finding fault with them, he saith, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah." Now, this is an old covenant promise here. This is a quote from Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31. It's a promise of the new covenant, and listen to the difference here. The old covenant was a list of commandments from the external. But the new covenant, "For finding fault with them, he saith, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah." And he says that if the old covenant would have been faultless, there would have been no place sought for a new one. Verse 9, this new covenant, and it says, "Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make." Now listen carefully. "For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for all shall know me from the least to the greatest. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. In that he saith, A new covenant he hath made the first old, now that which decayeth waxes old is ready to vanish away. Here he gives the idea of the new covenant. Now, one of the things to keep in mind here is that when we look at the old covenant and we look at the old commandment, the commandment was, Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not have any gods before me. It was all thou shalt and thou shalt not. Now listen to this. When we come to the new covenant, God says, I will put my laws in their mind and write them into their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And we see that, if we go to Ezekiel 36, I don't think I'm going to go there for sake of time, but there again, if you go to Ezekiel chapter 36, you'll find some more of the same idea. Again, a promise of the new covenant where God says, I will do it. In the Old Testament, it was thou shalt. In the New Covenant, God says, I will. And so that's one of the significant differences in the Old Covenant versus the New Covenant. That's why the New Covenant is so much better, because in the Old Covenant, they could never meet the grade. But under the New Covenant, God will do it for us. And he will put his law in our hearts. And it says that there should not every man teach his neighbor, and they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least to the greatest. In the Old Covenant, we had to go through a priest or a high priest to get to God. In the New Covenant, our high priest is in heaven with God, and he is God. It is Jesus Christ is our high priest, and he sits on the majesty of high, majesty in heavens, it says, and one place it says he ever makes intercession for us. And it says, then it gives chapter 9 gives a kind of a list of what the sanctuary was like in the Old Covenant, and how that was a picture of what was in heaven, and how Jesus told Moses to make something on earth that was a shadow of what was to come, so that we could get a picture of what it's going to look like. And he set up these high priests and everything. But now that Jesus Christ himself is the high priest, and he is in heaven, he is standing next to God there in heaven, and he is the one that we must go through. So I just want to encourage you to read this and study it out. There's some very deep spiritual truths in there, and I think you will find it a blessing. And we will have some more on it next time.